Just a moment to pause, arrive after your breakfast or whatever morning ritual you have, just to gather here and fully arrive. Well, good morning, everybody, as we gather for our last theme talk. I can't believe where the time has gone. And welcome to those, of course, who are joining us online as well. I'm Sheena from Godalming in Surrey. I'm white, middle-aged, average height, I think. I wear glasses. I have short hair, which in Rob's words, and this is what he told me when we were first dating, when I asked him what colour hair I had, he said, furniture colour. It wasn't the most romantic start, but I still married him, so there you go. But yeah, I don't quite know, I'm still trying to figure it out, but probably the colour of that door or something, but anyway. So that's me. So we're going to have some opening words adapted from a poem by the Welsh poet and priest R.S. Thomas, The Kingdom, or in Fiona's words, we can change that to The Kingdom. It's a long way off, but inside it there are quite different things going on. Festivals at which the poor are sovereign and the consumptive is healed. Mirrors in which love looks back and industry is for mending the bent bones and minds fractured by life. It's a long way off, but to get there takes no time and admission is free. If you purge yourself of desire and present yourself with your need only, and the simple offering of your faith, green as a leaf. And so, as we gather for our last day of theme talks and engagement groups, as we reflect back on the week we spent together, perhaps there's a sense that we've been building a bit of what R.S. Thomas describes. Beloved community, where hopefully we found a measure of healing for our fractured minds, although that's a lifetime's work, where the simple offerings of our faith, our beliefs, different as they are, have been shared and received through our words, our deeds, our laughter, our tears, our music, and our silence. So I'm going to invite somebody to light, would you like to light our chalice, Ivy? In honour of all that we've shared together and to honour all that is still to be shared, because hey, we're not done yet. This one small flame, a witness to all our small flames, a witness to the light within each one of us. Thank you, Ivy. So we're going to start, as we always do, with a story. Now, I don't think I can beat chicken licking. I really don't. But there you go. That's going to go down in the annals of summer school as... Yeah. But I do have a couple of props. Now, there's five children, I think. And I need you each to take a cloth. And don't fight over them, but We have jungle, we have sky, jungle. We have sky, we have sea, we have stars, and we have earth.
Jungle.
Oh dear. Mm. Oh, there you go, you have the jungle. Well, do you want to be the sky or the stars? Sky, are you, do you like to be stars?
No.
No? Does anyone want to swap? Are you happy with what about the sea with all the fishes in? Sky? Do you want any of them? Would you like any of these? Or do you want to share the jungle with? Doesn't like any of them. You can just do something. You can wave anything you like, but... With someone else, yeah? Okay.
I'll do the
sky. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, I haven't got the right kind of cloth for everybody, but yeah. So if you can sort of stand to one side and you sort of, yeah, you can drape yourself round them, you can put them round you, but you're not sort of on yet, so you sort of don't, you know, wait till I call you.
You're in the wings.
Now, this is a story that is found in many traditions, different versions. Now, it's a long, 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 long time ago. All human beings, so me and you, people like us, they were like little gods. They were gifted with great knowledge and power. But sadly, they abused the power so badly and did such terrible things that the great creator decided to strip them of their godlike status and hide their divinity where it would be impossible to find. Now, I know some of you know where this is going, but don't give away the answers. But where would you hide something that you didn't want humans to find? Where on all the earth might you hide such a thing? So the angels were invited to sit in council and to resolve the problem, and one by one they offered their suggestions. Now, if you know the answer, please don't shout it out. But where in this big, wide universe might you hide something really precious that you didn't want to be hidden?
Dig a big hole.
Dig a big hole. So, yes. So one angel said, let's bury it down in the earth.
So you're the earth,
yeah? Yeah, you're the earth. Right, they won't find it there. So, Ivy, you're on stage. But the great creator answered, no, that won't do. They will dig and tunnel deep down into the ground with their machines and mine the earth, in time plundering all her precious metals, stripping it bare. It won't be safe there. Okay, you come onto this side then. Where else might it be found? In the jungle. So what about the deep jungle, cried the angel, thinking he'd cracked it. They won't venture there because what lives in jungles?
Tigers
and... Tigers. Do you want to be a tiger? No. Okay. Lion. There's tigers and lions and snakes. They won't be brave enough to go into the jungle. But the great creator said, no, humankind in their greed will not only venture into the jungle, but root up the rainforests, cutting down and burning trees. Soon there'll be no jungle left to hide in. Thank you. Now the angels were beginning to be a bit perplexed now. Where else?
Right back of the fridge behind the ketchup.
Right back of the fridge behind the ketchup for those that didn't get it. I haven't got a cloth for that. So.
In the ocean.
In the ocean. Yeah, what about the ocean? Surely they can't swim, not very well, so it will be safe down in the ocean. But the great creator sighed and said, no, sooner and later they will explore the depths of the ocean with their boats, their trawling nets, polluting the waters, the corals, stripping it all life, and with their submarines they go right down to the bottom. It won't be safe there either. Thank you, ocean. Now, the angels were really beginning to be a bit depressed by now because they couldn't think of anywhere where this precious divinity would be safe. Any other thoughts?
The sky.
The sky. One little angel, the smallest of the angels, says, I've got it, I've got it. Because humans don't have wings. Humans can't fly. It will be safe there. But the great creator sadly shook her head and said, no. These humans are clever. They'll make great flying machines that will zoom high above the clouds and pollute the atmosphere, and they'll take trips, you know, overnight trips to Paris and back, and the millionaires will just take trips for the fun of it. It won't be safe there. Wow. So it was feeling a bit hopeless. But then another angel cried, "I've got it this time." Ha ha, I really have got it.
Outer space.
Yes, the moon. Let's hide their divinity right in outer space beyond the stars. There is no way humans will ever find it there. You would have thought that would be the case, wouldn't you? But guess what? The great creator wiped a tear from her eye and said, "It may take thousands of years, but I see a time where men, having destroyed the beautiful Earth, will build rockets that will shoot them to the moon and beyond, and will hatch plans to colonize other planets." And I think we might know some of the people we're talking about there. Their godlike nature won't be safe even in outer space. Oh, so do you want to join? The angels had run out of ideas, and the wisest of them spoke and said, "Then it seems, great creator, there is nowhere to hide humankind's divinity and godlike nature. No place on earth or in the seas or in the skies or in the jungle or beyond the stars." And the other angel said, "So then there really is no hope." The great creator was silent. But just when all seemed lost, she gently smiled and replied, "I know. I know what to do with the divinity of human beings. Now, if anyone knows the answer, any of the young people know." So that treasure, if you don't know what I mean by divinity, where would you hide? Where might it be?
Inside us.
Inside them, yes, inside them. We'll hide it in the deepest depths of themselves, right in their hearts, because that's the only place they'll never think to look. And ever since, whilst humans have circumnavigated the world and they burrow deep into the earth, let's give a round of applause for our earth, and dive deep into the oceans, explored leafy jungles with very scary lions. And when they've taken to the skies and sent rockets into outer space, while they've done all of that, very, very few have found the secrets of their divinity and their godlike nature, searching in vain for something out there that can only be found inside, within themselves. But a few rare individuals, and some of you might be amongst them, ask them, have discovered this God-given power within their hearts and have used it wisely. And that has made all the difference. And some say that the great creator hid this power from humans, not just because she knew that many of us would misuse it, but in the hope that through searching far and wide, we might grow into wiser, better people who are one day ready for the amazing discovery that divinity, the spark, the essence of God, lives inside us, in you and in me, and it shines out every time we love, show kindness, generosity, and compassion for one another, and for all the creatures we share our planet with, especially including this fierce lion, and for the wolves within us. So that's our story. Thank you for my wonderful cast of actors. And do you want to put all the cloths back in there? So we're going to sing a hymn that reflects that idea of being within our heart. I think this is a lovely hymn. It's a bit quirky, but I really enjoy it. Dancing Sweetheart. It talks about our human hearts and great heart of the universe. And number 26, and I think it's going to appear on screen. So, and I think during the singing of the hymn, our young people, our children will be leaving us for their activities. It might be new to you, but I think it's a fab hymn. Yes, by Andrew Hill, written by Andrew Hill, member of York Unitarians, Reverend Andrew Hill. So, friends, we're going to have, just as we did on whatever day it was when we started. What day is it, Angela?
It's Saturday.
And what day are we today?
We are
Thursday. Thank you. Just, Just as we had six people contributing at the start of the week, giving perhaps their thoughts, their questions before we arrived and gathered, just so this time we have five people taken from a range from across the groups who are going to be talking a bit about perhaps what this week has meant for them and what it's brought up, what's resonated for them and what they're going away with. And they're going to be in this order. So we're going to have James, who's going to be joining us, James Martin on video. And then we're going to be having Angela Mayo, then Sheila Jenkinson, Linda Moss, and Raj Savarave in that order. So, and if you forget, I'll sort of nod. So first up, James.
Hello, my name is James. I'm a 40-year-old male with albinism, meaning I'm visually impaired. I have a white goatee beard and I'm wearing rust-red polo shirt. Oh, and I've joined you as an interloper. I'm not from a Unitarian church or background. Indeed, I've been involved in several Christian denominations over the years, and I doubt having a theistic view will change, but hopefully my group has not found me too irksome in my words and expression this week. For me, this has been a period of turmoil in the last 6 months. With losing my parents in the last 2.5 years, employer hassles on my return to work, and beyond this, the resting majority of Christian peers being absent or non-proactive during that time, but those without a faith being much more proactive. Put simply, the season I found myself in was one of just being trusting and resting in what I had learnt and knew from my Christian journey, despite the situation and the challenges above. Then entering the post-funeral season, I find myself working out what life from now on looks like, and in particular, rebuilding active spiritual life and practices. Where will be the safe place to do some Bible study that's not discouraged, linked with the previous experiences, study without agenda to probe the above questions, to talk about loss at a human day-to-day level with a friend and not a just a professional. That's where our theme comes in. So much is about context, the journey which I hope you don't mind hearing. So what have I experienced over the last 6 months? I've experienced compassion and generosity from a friend who I've known infrequently but memorably, a few times over childhood and teens, then the odd digital conversation. She was willing to talk and make space for reality, for fun with new people, for genuine dialogue and listening to my spiritual moanings and musings. The invitation to join weekly Bible studies in a non-pressured, non-judgmental setting, a Unitarian study where there is no angst or dealing with or being dealt with for errant answers and get on doing that studying again, has been really helpful and healthy for me. I found in that study much more of the character and attitude of humility in working with the Bible than I'd experienced from most other individuals and churches, to listen and to contemplate, and that process in its own right being okay. So fast forward to 2 weeks ago, and as I wasn't likely to go on a physical retreat, my friend invited me to join the gathering online. Something that fitted perfectly for reflecting on my spiritual practice and journey going forward, and in a format that would work in my yo-yo geographic life at the moment. What I have found, if I would have one word for it, is authenticity, and this is found in a few points. A community of freedom to flourish without judgment. Passion to be intentional in doing simple things well, such as humility and listening to grow. And a value of compassion and action to not shy away from the questions and or the difficult. For me, experiencing that authenticity or intent to be that as part of a simple summary of Unitarian spirituality earlier in the week is something that aligns well with my key values. Now, I cannot promise I'm going to become a Unitarian, but what I see as a challenge for many churches in the UK, that of how authentic the flock and any leaders are, will define how many in younger generations experience and stick with spirituality. If my experience is typical, then be encouraged, but not complacent. May Unitarians be one of the hoped many churches that models authenticity around core values and beliefs, so more people have life, hope and meaning.
My name is Angela and I am a Unitarian. I was here not too long ago in this very room when someone gave me what I consider to be the biggest compliment. Someone I had just very recently met told me that they thought Unitarian ran through me like a stick of rock. The bedrock of my Unitarianism is a lack of belief in God. This absence is the driving force behind my faith, that we are the people who must save each other. This week at summer school has given me the mundane magic of electric light, an intellectual challenge with very big words and very big theological concepts. The joy of giving of myself and my skills to this beautiful community. The raucous laughter of ridiculous stories. Music that has touched my soul. The prophetic voice calling me to action. The real, countable, infinite beauty of Fibonacci numbers seen through new eyes. And love and care for me, as if I too have worth and dignity. And what I am taking away is a reaffirmation of truths I brought with me and already knew, that Unitarians are beautiful, and that in the absence of God, all I have in which to find my religion is the amazing, awe-inspiring universe and the teeming multitude of humanity, which has all of the power it needs to create wonders and change the world. And that is enough.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name's Sheila. I'm from Scarborough. I'm wearing this dress simply because it reminded me of a blue summer sky, and I'm in a beautiful garden full of flowers. When I was a young girl, my most favouritest book was The Magic Faraway Tree by Enid Blyton. The tree housed a wonderful mix of magical people, from elves to goblins and fairies, etc. A whole mixture of different diversities, living in harmony together. Three human children discovered the tree whilst playing in the enchanted wood. They were quickly accepted into the magical tree family, and they all had lots of adventures together. The tree family looked after each other with love and care. Sometimes conflicts happened, but they were always resolved with kindness. At summer school, I went off into my engagement group called The Words We Speak Become the House We Live In. This group opened my mind to new discoveries, open, honest discussions, and lots of laughter. It has opened up new thoughts and feelings in me, and I have learned a great deal. I have felt cocooned in safe hands during this thought-provoking process. We built our own house, starting with the foundations, hiding hidden messages from each one of us. And we did the same with the walls, and we made our own colourful windows. Today, we'll be building the roof. The theme talks were amazing, filled with positivity, learning, and laughter. And it was a great deal of help to me being a new worship leader. We had fun activities in the afternoons. That's if you wish to participate. Or you could just find peace and quiet somewhere. What has this anything to do with the magic tree, you may ask? Well, becoming a Unitarian and being at summer school feels like the magic tree has come back into my life, filling it with love and kindness, but most of all, lots and lots of support, just like the tree family had. As I now have found with my wide, diverse, colourful Unitarian family. The most important message I learned was that it's okay just to be me in the 21st century with my simple spiritual beliefs.
I'm Linda from Bangor Unitarians, and I came to Unitarianism gingerly. Uneasy to be associated with anything that smacked too strongly of religion, institutionalized Christianity, or spoke of God. This, I learned this week, made me an ABC Unitarian, anything but Christianity. In my own head, and more directly in conversation with firmly secular friends, I weaseled my way through my involvement with the Unitarians by talking of community, spirituality, principles of social justice, tolerance, and diversity. Eric's description of secretly listening to hymns and Gregorian chants struck an uncomfortable chord of recognition at my own lack of openness in certain company. So, the theme of the week, finding our religion, initially rather alarmed me. The opening story of the men in the dark cave, sheltering from the storm, and the strain and the change from God is nowhere, to God is now here, posed the central dilemma for me. Over the following days, the succession of personal accounts by the theme speakers told of their journey to Unitarianism painted a mosaic of traditions and beliefs, skepticism and doubt, dissatisfaction with various practices and institutions. I recognized the need, the searching, the occasional alignment with New Age ideas or outright rejection of religion. I listened and realized, to my surprise, that I had been on that search also, and I had not been all my life uncomfortably adrift in the need for a spiritual life. With apologies to Jane, that word. Unable to place myself. I had some years ago read and found resonance with writers like Matthew Fox, Bede Griffiths, Rupert Sheldrake, had read the mystics, had read of the mystics, Hildegard of Bingen, Meister Eckhart, etc. But life had rolled over me. I had lost those insights somehow. This is exciting. I find myself no longer afraid of words like religion and church, although I'm not sure I can take on God yet. It has been no epiphany, no road to Damascus. I'm still in that dark cave trying to decipher the words on the wall. I have not found answers. But I have found the questions I need to explore, for which I am grateful.
Good morning, I'm Raj. When I arrived here, I wasn't sure how or even why we should be finding our religion. After all, hadn't I worked hard to distance myself from it? However, I tried to remain open-minded and receptive, and through all the insightful sharing of others this week, I discovered a lot about myself, that the word religion isn't just about beliefs. Something that resonated with me during Sheena's first theme talk was that we could choose reclaiming over rejecting, that we have the opportunity and perhaps the responsibility to rediscover aspects of our religion that affirm and generate life rather than those that diminish it, and that I could intentionally begin to remember and reintegrate these elements into my life. Something else that struck me is that while everyone spoke honestly and unapologetically, not a single person here has said, here, this is what this means, or this is what you should do. Everyone has been on their own spiritual journey, and nobody has been afraid to show their working out. Their honesty and vulnerability enabled me to listen to my own story with generous and attentive ears. Through creative activities like drawing, sand play, collage, and poetry, I connected with my inner child. And I've come to view this reclaiming of a religious life as a deeply creative and ongoing practice. In my first engagement group session, We explored the etymology of religion, the word religion, and discussed what binds us together. Through this week of collective meaning making, I found that while we're not confined by creeds, we are indeed connected through covenant. And that is, I'm bound to my Unitarian siblings, not necessarily by what we believe, but by how we agree to be together. I hope I'm on a journey towards a second naivety. And while I've long set aside my evangelical Christian upbringing and its emphasis on being born again for salvation, I've come to find that we are constantly in a process of becoming and can choose to be born over and over, seeing the world afresh with new eyes. As I leave, I carry two questions. How might I find the courage to be who I am, while also encouraging others to be all they can be? And how might I live in a way that expands my connection with God and others and deepens the sacred argument of being alive?
Thank you, all of you. Thank you to James online, to Angela, to Sheila, to Linda and Raj. And let's show our appreciation. Let's give oh, so many wonderful fruits harvest from this week. Before I go on to sort of my part of the talk, we're just going to have a chance for a bit of a stretch, a bit of a stand if you would like to, and a bit of a hum. I'm going to invite you, based on the words of, I've said I draw on my predominant, well, maybe Unitarian and Christianity, Christian Unitarianism, but I also draw one of my other key go-to wells that I draw on are the Sufi mystics. And where would I be without Rumi? In fact, I met Rob through Rumi. Rumi brought us together. Through Elizabeth Birtles, we met at responding to Rumi group in Croydon Church. So I have such gratitude for that wonderful mystic that's go-to in so many services. And I'm going to read some words of Rumi about each of us being a note that God, whatever that source of life, blows through us. And we each have our unique note and all of those notes that are needed to make the whole symphony. So I'm literally just going to ask you to find your note and just hum. Hum loud. And you might change the note. It might go up and down a bit. Don't worry, don't panic. I think this will work. I have done it before in groups. And the hope is that we will make a beautiful noise together. I don't know for those folks joining on us line what it will sound like, I have to say. So apologies. But I do invite those who are joining online, if you would like to, you can stand up wherever you are if you're able and just hum along, stretch and hum. And we're doing this as a sort of sacred act of honouring all the voices in the room, all those people who haven't been heard at the front. And together we're making, hopefully, a beautiful harmony. And we'll just see how long it goes on for. And if you prefer to sit, that's fine. But it is your chance to stretch and wriggle a bit. So wait till I've given the... Wait, so you might want to stand up ready. But I will read the words and then I'll start the hum. And you'll pick it up, I hope. God picks up the reed flute world and blows. Each note is a need coming through one of us, a passion, a longing pain. Remember the lips where the wind breath originated and let your note be clear. Don't try to end it. Be your note. I'll show you how it's enough in this city of the soul. Let everyone climb on their roofs, metaphorically, and sing their notes. Sing loud. Thank you. And be interesting to know how that did sound for the folk online. So I've been given this, my bit is going to be in two parts. It's going to be a whistle-stop tour of where we've been this week in terms of the theme talks, just pulling out a few threads that people have shared, and then I'm going to be talking for the second part and sort of carrying on where I left off on whatever day it was, Saturday. Now, this feels a bit of an impossible task because so much has been shared and I've been taking copious notes, but I've not really had chance to put them together in a neat, coherent way. So this is just a bit of a whistle-stop reminder of just some of the core threads and things that I've picked up from our wonderful theme speakers. And I must just say, I've been amazed. So I have to admit, when Jane first approached me and said, this is the theme this year, I thought, you've got to be joking. Unitarians, religion, come on, this is risky. Will anyone sign up? This is our 30th anniversary. Celebration, you know, and you're going for the right down and dirty, as it were. But I was wrong. Took a risk, and lots of people showed up, and another 20 or so online. So whatever our individual resistance and residues to the word religion, it sparked sufficient interest. And for me, it's wonderful that on our 30th anniversary, because, of course, if you think about it, summer school used to be called RE, summer school. So I think we're going back to how it started, as religious education. Now that's another trigger word perhaps for some of us, but yeah. So I'm really grateful to all of those who have risen to the... We heard from Tina and Andy and Rob and Emma and Judith and John, who between them offered a few questions as to what they were bringing and what they hoped the week might unfold for them, and a few of their own thoughts. So questions like, what does it mean to be unapologetically religious in a culture that often equates religion with rigidity or irrelevance? And questions about, well, should we be reclaiming something called neo-dissent, dissenting against the dogmas of our time, calling us back to gospel essentials? On that first day, we heard the idea that perhaps religion is about relationship with a good enough God, or a more than good enough God, however we define that, but also the good enough community or sangha. We heard about the importance of ritual in religion, that religion can help us, or spiritual communities, a way to grieve better. And also the questions like, can we speak firmly our truths without risking offence? And how can we act in the world and not be a passive bystander? We heard the view that actually, no, it's not religion, it's spirituality, that more than that, it's about a relationship. a personal, experiential relationship with God, that that's what's important. And then more questions posed. What are the dangers of a pick-and-mix approach to religion and to Unitarians in particular? And amongst all those questions, the idea that out of it all, on a gravestone, on a headstone, the words, God is love, remains. So Saturday, those are some of the things people brought us. And then we had on Sunday, Mel and Jane, with their wonderful talks. Mel, the religious life matters. Working and living as if God, as if something, someone beyond existed. We were reminded of the everyday saints in our lives. And we were left with a question, what is holding you back from living a religious life? Jane offered us that Unitarian conversion story from rationalist, head, agnostic atheist, perhaps, environment, moving towards embracing religion, not spirituality, that belief in God is permissible. We have permission to take a leap of faith. Process of deconstruction and reconstruction. And we were reminded that religion, that word, comes from the word that means to bind and unite, but also to reread, to go back. And then on Monday, I think, we heard from Winnie and Sarah, and we heard that lovely story from Sarah about God visiting in the guise of all those other people. And Sarah concluded that maybe God can be found wherever love is shown. Maybe they're the same thing. And she also reminded us a word for belief is to tie to knot together, which can seem quite restrictive. But another meaning, definition, is tender, open-hearted connection. Religion is tender-hearted, open connection. How beautiful is that? And Winnie stressed the importance, it's not so much what we believe, it's not our theology, so much as what we do, how we act in the world. She reminded us of our radical roots, that that can be the foundation, our theological foundation, that our religion must be action-based and value-based to meet the needs of this century. And she took us back to the object of a General Assembly. And people who don't know what the object is, they think it's an, you know, I thought, well, what do they mean by the object? It's just that set of principles. And then we come to Eric and Danny, and I, goodness knows what day of the week it was. But the chicken licking story. And of course, Eric, drawing on that, the test of a good religion, can you remember, were you paying attention? What were the tests of the two, of the good religion? Can you joke about it? When the sky falls, when it crumbles, will it help? If you remember nothing else from that week, I'm taking that away because I've had moments where I've taken myself too seriously this week and it felt like the sky was about to fall. So, and that really helped me see the funny side. And actually the sky hasn't, it's just an acorn. And Eric talked about needing to go through that angry stage, to rage clean your spiritual cupboards, but then dust off what's there and have another look. And also using the body, fitness, how that can take you so far. Fitness became Eric's church, but ultimately wellness clubs don't help you to live in the fullest way. And then with Danny, he gave us a long name. Does anyone, can anyone remember? He taught us a long theological term. See, they were listening, Danny. Anatheism, which is rediscovering the divine having previously rejected God and religion. So another process of reconstruction through the process of AA recovery. I'm moving from that place where humanity is flawed to back to the heart, really. And you left us with the statement, what's the heart of my faith? It's simple, it's blessing. A journey from nothing to everything. And then on our whatever day of the week it was yesterday, we have Fiona and Lizzie. Lizzie with the beautiful story of the wolf. The wolf is the shame, the mud that we hide because we feel bad, inadequate, unworthy, that hides in the shadows. And then the grace is the sunshine that brings that out. And in bringing it out, we find healing. And the idea that that healing, that sunshine, that grace is found in spiritual religious community amongst you guys. And reminding of us our roots, that Unitarians is built on that root, that human nature is essentially good, even though we do bad, wrong things. So it's there in our roots, original blessing rather than original sin. And then Fiona's talk, and there was so much in that video, but again, it, cultivating the heart, linked to the idea of heart and courage. Heart is the centre of our courage, going back to the heart. And the ideas about brokenness we find in Japanese wabi-sabi. Isn't that a wonderful word? Wabi-sabi, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. And kintsugi, golden repair. And the reminder that that word holy, which might give some of us the heebie-jeebies because it's a bit sanctimonious, but it comes from the root of wholeness. Whole, health, heal, hail. That's a whistle-stop tour, but I really encourage you to go back and look at the videos. They're all on YouTube, and share them with others because they're really worth hearing again. So that's where we've been. And I'm just going to offer a few thoughts of my own. I said in my first talk about whilst I draw on many traditions, I'm drawn to digging down deep into the one I'm most familiar with, the Christian tradition, my roots. And when I mentioned the word well, of course, Fiona synchronistically mentioned wells and the connection between wells and well-being. So the well you draw from is where you will draw your sense of well-being, what you need to thrive. So I draw from the Christian well. Others of you may have another primary well you draw from. Hinduism, Buddhism, Sufism, earth-centered traditions or humanist philosophies. But I think I pose the question, so if that's the case, that Unitarians, we're all drawing on many wells, how can we avoid being a pick-and-mix religion that's running all over the place? And I'd like to offer a tentative answer as best I see it. And I'd like you to imagine that our Unitarian and Free Christian movement is a large, expansive garden. And it's made up of many smaller gardens, each containing a well that draws from a particular wisdom tradition. And this well irrigates flowers and fruits of many scents and flavours. And each of us is responsible for maintaining our small garden. So I'm in my plot and I'm drawing water and I'm growing fruits from the Christian tradition. I'm trying to clear out the brambles which threaten to choke new life and clearing out the silt which accumulates. And you are hopefully in your small plot doing something similar with your core tradition, your go-to scriptures. And we each offer hospitality and we visit each other's gardens and sample what's on offer. So Tina, in your garden, you can offer me the sweet fruits from the Hindu tradition because that's what you know most about. And Angela, in your garden, you can remind me of the fruits of the humanist tradition because that's what you know most about. And you in turn are invited to drop by my garden and see what's growing there. And We might be working along like-minded others. And sometimes congregations grow a distinct kind of garden. So our Free Christian Churches and the Unitarian Christian Association, of which I'm part, in our garden we offer a refuge to exiles from mainstream churches who come still seeking fruits from the liberal Christian tradition. Whilst in New Birmingham, I know that in your experimental services, you're catering for people who find the waters of religion too bitter and finding sweetness in secular expressions of spirituality. And in this great garden, when people arrive looking for refreshment, we can signpost them and say, okay, I know perhaps where you will most find that spiritual nourishment. And if someone doesn't like what I offer, rather than get defensive, I can point them in the direction of someone who's maintaining that well that will most quench their thirst. And from time to time, we'll bring our jugs of water and we'll bring our fruits to harvest to the common table where all are welcome. Deborah wrote it on a post-it note. If we're all drawing from different wells, surely we should pass the chalice cup round and freely taste the wonders of other traditions. And not everything will be to our taste, but we celebrate what each person's brought, because we know there are some people out there who need exactly that flavour to help them thrive. Now, I don't think it's true that all the water from all our wells tastes the same, because, you know, water can taste different depending on the rock it comes through. But perhaps it's the same river. Underneath, right deep down, it's the same river, the same source of life. And the fruits we grow, different as they are, come from the one ground of being. So each of us in our gardens is discerning what's health-giving and nourishing in our core tradition and what's toxic and unhealthy. Each of us cultivating new seedlings, grafting new fruit stocks onto old. So for me, rather than settling for that, give me that old-time religion, give me that old-time religion, give me that old-time religion, it's good enough for me, and etc., etc. Well, no, actually, there's bits of it that I can honour and recognise and give thanks for, but a lot of it doesn't serve me anymore. So it's changing and it's drawing, so seeing my faith through the lens of science and ecology and art and psychology, the old and the new. So I'm there pulling weeds of that which no longer serves, and I hope you're pulling weeds from your garden. And there are no walls shutting people out. And we're not ransacking the gardens of other faiths that we don't approve of and saying, no, I don't want what you've got to offer because that's wrong. I'm going to pull out what you're growing because that's just weeds. We don't do that. At our best, we're a religious community that keeps the landscape open and builds interconnecting paths between different wells that cater for all these diverse needs. So that's the image I offer in terms of perhaps how we can be drawing on different wells, but still connected. But are there also one or several central wells where perhaps we all feel comfortable drawing from? I mean, yes, we all go and dip our wells in our buckets in different people's wells from time to time, but are there some central wells that we can all draw on? And I think there are, and we've had some clues this week. So, as I've already mentioned, reminding that in our roots that are in Christian tradition, as Lizzie said, perhaps one of the most important things there is the idea that our forebears taught the goodness of humanity, original blessing rather than original sin, a theology of blessing, hope, not hell. That's what they were fighting against in those early years. And I think we could all agree on that. Whatever our theology, we want ours to be a theology of original blessing and a theology of hope, not hell, whatever our other beliefs. Winnie reminded us, again, a well we can draw on all of us. It's what we do. It's our deeds, not our creeds, that ultimately matter. We can draw on that well of the radical heritage of dissent. And some of us are doing that. There are Unitarians today that are out there protesting standing up against oppression and inequality and walking and sitting for peace. So we've got that heritage of dissent that is regardless of our beliefs in terms of our whether we're Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, humanist. And then I think another central well that I would say we can all draw in is a theology of questions, a theology of not knowing. And this really came to mind beautifully in Emma's epilogue. The idea of not just enlightenment, not just the light, but also honouring the dark places, the dark spaces, where it's not all dazzling and it's not all clear, where not everything is sewn up or sorted. Being open to mystery, a theology of doubts. To throw in another long word, which some of you I think have come across this week in your engagement groups, apophatic, not apathetic, apophatic. Any clever clogs, particularly in your and Eric's and Danny's group, know what that means. Okay. Okay.
Essentially, the belief that it's all beyond human wisdom, understanding.
You can't. Yeah.
There's nothing really we can say.
Yeah, that sometimes we can't. Words run out. What can't be said about God, mystery, universe? And I think Unitarians have a head start in that. We come to some beliefs. And they might, and some truths, and perhaps some certainties on our own experience, but we hold it lightly. There's still more revelation, is ongoing. Nothing's fixed or final. That's another core well we can draw on, I think. And if you disagree, you can argue with me later. And another central well we might all draw on is linked to our name. And I'm stating the blinding obvious here. There's been recent debate in recent years, should we change our name because Unitarian, what's that? Nobody knows what the hell we mean or we stand for. Should we change our name? And I say absolutely not. Because the word Unitarian comes from the Latin word unitus, which means oneness or unity. And whilst historically that was about the oneness of God rather than the Trinity, the word has evolved far beyond that. And a few years back, I came across this wonderful centenary edition of the Christian Life and Unitarian Herald. I think it was a pre-runner of the Inquirer, full of lots of worthy, stern-looking ministers. This is where we've come from, folks. And look at us now. These were the ministers as they should have been. And their collars, mostly men. But anyway, scares me looking at it. I feel totally inadequate. But anyway, there's Reverend Alistair Webster. You can look at this later. In 1913, I read these words. He's Scottish, and they stopped me in my tracks. In its wider connotation, the term Unitarian stands for a cosmic unity, a physical and spiritual oneness which pervades all life and holds the ages together in concord. Unitarian is the watchword of modern philosophy. The superstitious fancy of duality has yielded to the scientific proof of unity. The idea of oneness applies to all humanity and all life. An enlarged sense of universality. And he goes on to say it's no longer a term used as a criticism of Trinitarianism, but now it covers much more. The faith in a universal reality of whom, through whom, and to whom all are all things. And this high and grand Unitarianism is spreading, the most significant philosophical fact in the sphere of religion today. And he says it has the power of physical science, the momentum of psychological concern, not a passing theory, but a line in the march to the ultimate. The name Unitarian may be rejected, but the principles will remain. Future philosophical thought. And you can read it full if you want to. Now, this was written over 100 years ago. And to me, it sounds pretty progressive. Now, he was a bit of a radical. I think he was a Christian socialist who actually called himself a Christian anarchist. So he stirred things up. But I wonder what we make of that statement, the term Unitarian stands for cosmic unity. Sounds a bit New Agey, a bit Star Trek-y. And did you know this? I know nothing about footwear, but apparently cosmic, I Googled it, cosmic unity has been co-opted as, anyone know? A brand name for Nike trainers. Oh. I kid you not. But we got there first. Back in 2013. And I think we should be reclaiming the term cosmic unity. Or maybe we should all just go out and get a pair and flash them around, but tell people what we mean by it. Yeah. And another piece of synchronicity. Synchronicity. I love it. This artwork, I came in and saw
cosmic
Unitarian universe, cosmic unity. This piece of artwork, then there was no collaboration. So thank you to Kate and all those who contributed, and those who are online who can't see it. There's a wonderful piece of artwork with the word cosmic, Unitarian universe and unity on. And I'm not so sure about the psychedelic bit, but anyway. So this new and enlarged sense of universality might be something we can draw from whatever, it's a bit like the perennial philosophy, which is at the root of all faith traditions. Maybe this could be the well we can all draw from, drinking from whatever sources of wisdom help us grow in unity with ourselves, you know, all those different aspects of ourselves, grow in unity with each other, with all of creation, and for some of us with that larger reality which we call many names. With a focus on oneness, one humanity, one creation, one world, or at least only one world we know about, with no borders, one sky above us, one energy which gives life, one source, one ground of being, one light refracted in a rainbow of colours. This isn't unique to Unitarians. Other faith traditions have this belief in oneness, but it's there in our work, in the very name. I think that's something we can share as a commonwealth. And these wonderful words were in contrast to a near contemporary of Alexander Webster. A near contemporary of the gloomy German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, tortured genius, who I surmise was the product of religious trauma. And several decades before Webster wrote this hope-filled, optimistic missive, Nietzsche offered a parable about a man who, on a bright morning, lit a lantern and ran to the marketplace, calling out unceasingly, "I seek God, I seek God." And there were many people around who did not believe in God and teased him and made jokes and say, "Why is he lost? Has he strayed? Is he hidden? Has he taken?" And the man transfixed them with his glance and said, "Where is God gone? We have killed him. You and I. We are all his murderers. How were we able to drink up the sea? What did we do when we loosened this earth from its sun? Where do we move? Away from all suns, in all directions. We stray as through infinite nothingness. Has it not become colder? Does night not come on, darker and darker? Shall we not have to light lanterns in the morning? God is dead, and we have killed him." And this is just a summary of that parable. And he says, "What sacred game shall we have to devise? Shall we ourselves have to become gods?" And his hearers were silent and looked in surprise. And at last he threw the lantern to the ground, and it shattered and was extinguished. And it's further said that he went into churches and intoned his requiem. And he said, "What are these churches now if they are not the tombs and monuments of God?" Now, Nietzsche offered a picture of a future world where religion was eradicated and God is no more. But there's that sort of twist. It almost seems that in the parable, humans have untethered themselves from the sun, left in darkness, perhaps suggesting some kind of approaching planetary disaster, which seems a bit chillingly prescient of our times. So has the flame of religion, the lantern, been shattered and gone out? Has God been killed? Some would say yes, and they'd say it's a good thing, because religion's a delusion, and we need to outgrow it. And Nietzsche believed this in part, but he still offers a warning, because once we kill God, or mystery, whatever name, that sense of something larger than just ourselves, what are we left with? When humans are the pinnacle of creation, when it's just about us, rather than us in relation to the creatures we share the planet with, rather than relation to the universe, what then? So whilst I feel sympathy with those who, like John Lennon, ask us to imagine there's no heaven and no religion because of all the violence done in the name of religion, I also feel the chill of a world that's lost its collective soul. And when we see what happens when humans act as if they're gods, without the wisdom or the humility to use their powers for the common good. And so I hold fast instead to that larger vision of Alexander Webster, who, whether we believe in God or whether we don't, asks us to hold on to that idea of some kind of unity and oneness that we are part of, but it's not just about us. Remembering the physical and spiritual oneness that pervades all life. So in a world in crisis, when the lights are going out in many ways, we as inheritors of the flame of liberal religion are called to keep our little lamps burning, offering whatever light we have to all those seeking refuge from fundamentalist religion and fundamentalist atheism, where the world is stripped of mystery. And also refuge for those wanting more than secular materialism, where cosmic unity just means Nike trainers. And so as I draw my talk to a close, I offer some words from Mark Nepo's book, The Exquisite Risk, which for me sums up our task. And again, I invite you to substitute the word God for good, or love, whatever works for you. During the years Carl Jung was exploring the unconscious, he had a dream in which he was carrying a small flame, maybe a candle, and he walked into the wind. He felt imperative he keep going, but he had to cup his hand to protect the small flame from going out. And at the same time, he sensed a dark figure following him. Fearful, he moved faster into the wind, which made the flame flicker all the more. He woke to realize that small flame is the light of consciousness we each carry, the light of our soul, which we must protect and keep alive as we move through our days. And the dark figure darting behind is his own shadow, cast by the flicker of his soul's small flame. We must each protect the small flame from being blown out, lean into the wind of our days, and not run from the shadow we cast from being human. We are left with the delicate task of keeping this small flame alive whilst washing the dishes and paying the bills. In her novel, The Abyss, Marguerite Ukanen suggests that God is that small flame, and that part of the immense majesty of creation is that we, small beings that we are entrusted with keeping God, good, love, from being snuffed out. Possibly we alone are the ones to feed and keep this flame alight. In every small gesture and thing of this world, with every small courage we mount, we keep this flame alight. It's difficult to keep the flame alive on our own, and it's why we need each other. So if you see me on the street cupping something as I lean into the wind, don't be shy, come over and help, for it is God I'm carrying, or at least that portion of God we call soul, and I will calm your fear of what's chasing you, and perhaps we can put whatever books we carry down and open our small flames to the Son. May it be so. Thank you for listening. So we're going to do that now. We're going to open our small flames to the Son, and we're going to have a time of reflection and prayer. And during some music, Blue Boat Home, favourite song of mine, we're going to invite you to write on your post-it note a prayer of something you're harvesting from this week that we've shared together. A prayer of thanksgiving, or an intention, or a need. A prayer from your heart as we prepare to return to the rest of our lives. Thank you. So as we pray together, I'd like us to just give thanks for past summer schools, the 30 years where the little light, the little flame of religion, of liberal, inclusive religion has been burning. And giving thanks for those people who started it all off. For Trevor Jones, for Sheila Jones, for Jean Mason, for Elizabeth Birtles, and there may be others. And for those who have kept this flame going over the years and have contributed so much, and all those who have worked so hard that we can be here today. And so at the end, as we draw to the end of this week, these are our prayers which we offer in our own way to whatever is of highest worth. I pray that each and every one of us speaks of our experience here at Summer School and shares what we've learned. I pray for the courage and the laughter to continue to explore the theology of love and not knowing. A light has been shined through a crack in the mud, and I give thanks. I came here not really knowing why or what for. I found connection, love, life, and God. I pray we become like the gods we would want to believe in, loving, generous and kind. I honour the depth of wisdom in this, our quirky and beautiful bunch of searching souls. Let your light shine. May we keep the flame alive every minute of our daily lives. I'm giving thanks for shared exploration and experiences, for laughter and tears with all of you this week, my kindred. I pray that we can extend our welcome wider and wider to all creation. I pray that we will keep authentically exploring. And there are so many other prayers from our hearts that are offered in this heart-shaped bowl that we're not going to be able to read out. But we honour them all, and they will all be read, and they'll all be posted for those of us that are here to read. May the blessing of community carry us safely home. And this prayer perhaps sums up something of this week. Holy, holy, holy. All is well. All is well. All is well. Thank you for your prayers. And we offer them up to, in reverence to that oneness, the centre point of all cultures and beings, the light within all life, the face behind all faces, the colour within all colours, and the heart within all hearts. And may we stay open to yet what is yet to unfold the rest of this day and when we leave summer school, to find that of God, that of good, wherever we go, ever present, now here, hidden in our hearts, waiting to be discovered. May it be so. Amen. So let's sing together our closing hymn, number, I don't know, I've lost the plot by this point, but it will be on the screen. Earth was given as a garden. closing words by John Murray and Rumi. You may possess only a small light, but uncover it and let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage, and preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. The light streams towards you from all things, all people, all possible permutations of good, evil, thought and passion. The lamps are different, but the light is the same. One matter, one energy, one light, one light mind, endlessly emanating all things. One turning and burning diamond. One, one, one. And we're going to go out to a Kate Rusby song, Go Straight Away if you need to. But if you can stay, sing along, Let Your Light Shine, as chairs are moved around. And thank you, everybody.
Shake up, you can be still, or cast smiles around you at will. You can fly high, you can dig deep, cling on and take a big leap. Let your light shine, let your light shine, let your light shine on. Claim that in the sunshine, the shadows will be gone. Let your light shine, let your light shine. Song. You can dress down, you can show class, or tell the world.